This is URN.
The Film Show Breakdown.
So, guys, what did you see anything in the cinema over winter break?
I did. It's not the film we're talking about today, but I went to go see Mary Poppins Returns, which was actually kind of better than we all anticipated it was going to be.
Apparently it's not doing that well.
To be fair, when we went, it was pretty packed, actually. It was really full. But I guess it's kind of had its Christmas run now and everybody's back at kind of school, so like the family audience has maybe dissipated now.
That would make sense.
Yeah, but at the time when we went, like early January, we went on literally the second, I think it was. It was really, really full.
Is it Emily Blunt?
Yeah.
How did she do?
She was quite good. My mum came out and said her accent was like a bit overpronounced. My mum used to do languages, so she's got an, like, you know, she knows about accents and things. And she was like, it was a bit too on the nose, maybe. And I saw Mark Kermode talk about it. And while he absolutely loved it, which was quite a relief, he did say her accent was a bit like Tim Curry in Rocky Horror slightly. So it does have that quite edginess to it. But she did a good job and she kind of made it both her own kind of character and also sort of was still faithful to kind of the Julie Andrews incarnation.
How did she compare to Julie Andrews?
She's a lot kind of, she's a bit harsher. She's a bit kind of ruder than Julie Andrews was in a way. But apparently the books are quite like that. So she didn't watch the Julie Andrews film. She just went and read P.L. Travers's books and then kind of took her own take on Mary Poppins there. So yeah, but it's still really good and I would definitely recommend going to see it.
What about you, Isaac?
I went to see Alfonso Cuarón's new film, Roma, in the cinema. I sort of wanted to see it in cinemas rather than Netflix. And I thought it was really good. I would say in terms of like more technical side, I think it's Cuarón's best work. I still think my personal favourite by him is still Children of Men. But even though it is a very intimate family drama, it does feel like an epic. There are certain scenes where there are hundreds of extras. There's a particular segment of the film where it's during a student riot that goes bad and some of the main characters are in a furniture store, and without spoiling the film, one of the characters is pregnant throughout the film and she her water breaks during this, and then it does turn into a Children of Men, the end of Children of Men. It actually was kind of similar how it was filmed and how it was told, but I like that they just made this family drama that it was intimate still, but it did feel like an epic in scale.
So yeah. You definitely recommend it?
I recommend, since it's on Netflix, anybody who has a Netflix account should watch it.
Limited release?
It was limited release. When I went to see it, I saw it in a Curzon, and it was a 30-seat theatre. It was packed, but that's 30 seats, so it was nice to see it on the big screen.
Well, according to the box office, both of your films are nothing compared to our main film of this first of today, I should say, Aquaman, directed by James Wan and starring Jason Momoa as the titular character. Now, neither of you two have seen this.
No.
Not really.
Now, you might be interested to find out, Lizzie, that Julie Andrews is in this movie.
I know. I heard she had a cameo, which felt bizarre. There was a point in Mary Poppins Returns where another famous actress has a cameo, and I sort of felt that was meant to be Julie Andrews, and then I kind of felt like, oh, maybe she had a filming clash, and I kind of wonder if it was Aquaman now.
Well, her role was voice-based, so it shouldn't have taken up too much time. Not to spoil how they come across this creature, but she plays what is essentially a bigger, meaner version of a kraken.
Oh, okay.
Mixed with a leviathan. So it's like,
see, now
playing
I want to see it on that alone now, because I'm trying to imagine that creature with Julie Andrews' voice. That's what I'm just trying to work.
It works pretty well, because she's sort of like, she looks down on Aquaman, and when she's chasing him, it's basically like squashing an ant to her.
Mm.
And I won't spoil any more of how that turns out. Now, were either of you two interested in seeing this movie?
Not really.
No.
Well, you're missing out on an okay epic.
Like, I kind of am now after the brief amount of detail you just provided, but I'm sort of fallen off with DC films, I think, because they've just had such a bad run that I haven't wanted to see this.
One thing I did want to talk about is how this fits into the DC Cinematic Universe. So apparently it takes place after the Steppenwolf attack.
Okay.
Which, if like me, you might be watching the film and thinking,
I don't know what you're talking about.
I think that's in Justice League. I think that's,
I didn't watch that.
I don't. But like, I think that is the plot of Justice League, isn't it? Yeah.
So they are still acknowledging the rest of the universe, the DC universe, but they don't feature any cameos.
Mm.
And they don't mention the main bad guy of the universe whose name I should really know. They're kind of blanking on. They don't mention him. So they don't mention any of the actual extended stuff, but they acknowledge that it is in the same timeline.
I respect that.
I didn't even know they had a bad universe, man. Is it like their version of Thanos or something?
Yeah, but... Yeah.
Sinestro. Is it Sinestro? Or
no, that's more of a Green Lantern guy.
Yeah.
It'll come back to me. Not that anyone cares, because no one cares about the... Because they've flopped so hard.
Well, aside from Aquaman, Aquaman seemed to do pretty well financially.
Aquaman and Wonder Woman, both critically and financially, did better. Well, not financially, but did better than the main films. Well, at least critically they did.
Yeah, it seems the solo films do get a better rep than the combined. Like, I know Man of Steel has mixed reviews, but that did better than like Batman vs Superman and Justice League, and I actually kind of like Man of Steel, even with its flaws.
The thing is, though, now Henry Cavill and Ben Affleck have apparently left, that does make it completely understandable why they can't fully acknowledge the rest of the...
Have they actually gone now, then?
Well, Ben Affleck has. I'm not sure what the current status of Henry Cavill is, but he was going to leave.
Yeah.
It was very likely that he was going
to leave.
Well,
he was complaining he wasn't getting, like, quote-unquote, A-lister pay when he's not really an A-lister, so...
No, well, he's playing like one of the most recognizable characters.
Yeah, but I don't feel people are like, Henry Cavill, that's the household name all the time. Do you know what I mean? Like, he's Superman, but I don't think he is the A-lister he thinks he is. But
it didn't help that he wasn't. It didn't feel like he was playing Superman. He was too brooding. He was all like against what should have been a Superman movie.
Mm.
Fun fact: this is the 8th highest-grossing live-action superhero movie ever made. Behind the 3 Avengers films, as well as Black Panther, Iron Man 3, Captain America Civil War, and The Dark Knight Rises. It made $1 billion in the box office. That is pretty special.
I checked, and I think it is the first film that made over $1 billion in a few years, which wasn't Disney-related or Universal. I think the last film that made over $1 billion, which wasn't Disney or Universal, was the 4th Transformers movie in 2014. So it says a lot, doesn't it?
I wonder if DC is now looking at Aquaman as their Iron Man for a possible fresh start of the universe.
We talked kind of about the soft reboot they're kind of trying to do of the DCEU.
It does appear.
Yeah, like they're doing that with, it would seem, the second Wonder Woman film, is they're giving her a Flashpoint storyline, apparently.
I was going to say, if they were to do a Flash movie, they were saying they would base it off Flashpoint, which would completely restart it.
I mean, I don't know what things are.
Or
but
they should just do, like, they just want the characters to wake up and it's all a dream, and then there's all of them, and you were there. Like the end of Wizard of Oz, and you were there, and you were there, and you were there. Yeah. And then people would be like, yeah, that's kind of contrived,
that's,
but
that's
people would
fine.
Be happy.
But I think Jason Momoa did a good job as Aquaman. I don't know if he's really a lead for a cinematic universe, but if he's like the best they've got right now.
Yeah, we were talking about that before. We were kind of saying that we think that's obviously part of them kind of trying to revamp Aquaman, because Aquaman's been quite seen as this sort of...
But the joke for decades.
Yeah, the joke basically in the comics. And, you know, now they've kind of cast this like big burly Jason Momoa, and they're like, you know, oh, now he's cool, and now he's got muscles and tattoos, and now he's like this. And I feel like they've really just tried to massively overhaul it in that way.
They at least make him flawed, and they acknowledge what their flaws are. So it's better than it just being him being completely one-dimensional.
Mm. But I feel like he was probably cast for more his kind of like the physicality and what he would bring to the changing look in Aquaman, I suppose, than possibly him as an actor. I don't know. But
so that is our very in-depth review of Aquaman that we've all seen. 10 out of 10. So now it's time for our classic film, which is Old Boy, which was released in 2003. It's pretty good. The guy who plays Odesu, which is the main character's name, he like lost and gained weight depending on the part of the film that he was doing.
Okay.
So it starts off as like overweight, and he's like slobbish, and he's a bit of a joke.
He's drunk in the beginning.
Exactly.
He's incarcerated in a police station.
Mm.
Then once he's released from the police station, he's captured again. And over the course of 15 years, he like physically trains himself to get revenge. And he's so focused on that one thing that his body completely changes. I think it's such a dynamic change for like what otherwise would be very lazily made. And we can see in like the 2013 adaptation that they tried to go with something similar, but Josh Brolin, who plays this version of the protagonist, just like didn't have the same commitment to
Oh, is this in the remake they made?
Yeah, so part of why we're going to be talking about remakes after the next break is like this film is such a good example of what can go wrong with a remake. And that why I consider it, well, why I consider it a modern classic is that it was remade only 10 years later.
Mm.
What would you say? Have you seen the remake?
No, I have no interest in seeing the remake.
Fair enough. It's by Spike Lee.
Ah, of Black Klansman.
The only film that's not a Spike Lee joint.
So that was actually a very appropriate song, and I did that on purpose. I'm not disorganized at all.
So, just to talk about that kind of remake thing, because obviously it's quite interesting, presumably we're looking at a South Korean film. Is the language South Korean?
Yeah, and you can use subtitles for it, which I recommend doing, but you really get into it and you stop being aware that you're reading subtitles. Mm, that's a really interesting thing that some foreign films have.
Mm.
Like, some purists might argue that it shouldn't be remade, but I think you can do a lot with the cultural change, especially the time change. Now it's nearly 20 years later. One thing is, in South Korea, TV... He has a TV with him in the room, but they don't teach him swear words, like, in South Korea at that time in the 90s when he's supposed to be imprisoned. So when he's released and he, like, fights with a group of teenagers, they, like, swear at him, and that's... One of the things he takes away from it is this new swear word he learned. I don't know if you'd be able to do a similar thing with a Western adaptation, but I think that's a very fascinating look into the culture at the time. I actually like really appreciated that. Is there anything else you picked up on that might be a cultural difference between South Korea?
I think that even though, from what I heard, the remake isn't very good, I think, you know, most 99.9% of films can be remade and changed. Like I was mentioning to Jamie before the show that, you know, there's been numerous Shakespeare adaptations in all different shapes and forms, you know, like my personal favorite being Akira Kurosawa's Ran, which is a loose adaptation of King Lear, but it takes it in its own direction. Even though it's you can say it's an adaptation, it's kind of its own thing, and it does adapt a lot of things from the story because Shakespeare is so universal.
I would agree with that with Ran, actually.
But
yeah,
Old Boy, like, even though it's set in South Korea, like, it's like, even though I love Old Boy, it's you could have remade it, because it's not like, even though it's South Korean, there's not a lot about the like identity. It's not like the culture and the world, like the country, is integral to the story or the characters.
There's sort of a weird romantic dynamic between the two leads that wouldn't translate as well.
I think I'm kind of intrigued by this kind of idea of it not being translatable to another context, because another thing that I've kind of looked at a long time ago, about 2 years ago in something I did, was the idea that sometimes, especially as a Western audience looking at a foreign film, we don't see its flaws as easily. Because we
don't notice that,
because that's like we are not like necessarily up on the language, and so we're reading the subtitles, and so we can't tell when bad acting is bad acting because it's in a different language, and we're not sort of savvy to like the intonations and all the changes. I'm not saying that this is secretly a terrible film or something, but I just wonder whether maybe like sometimes we kind of see foreign films as kind of more elite because we can't see the faults we can with our own English-speaking films.
At least with this one, we know that it did quite well, like awards, like internationally.
That's a good way to tell these things.
Yeah, won second prize at Cannes.
Yeah.
Another thing is, like, we've talked about the cultural differences, but at the time, 15 years ago, we don't know how they were received. Now we're going to talk about our individual recommendations for films which should never be remade for one reason or another. Does anyone particularly want to go first? So, my choice is Forrest Gump, because not only is it a good film, you're not going to get a casting as good as that again without it seeming like a bad parody. And who did you use as an example, Isaac?
Oh, it would be like if you ever seen Tropic Thunder, the fake film within it, Simple Jack, that Ben Stiller, like his character plays, is like a like an exaggeration of someone with mental disabilities.
See, you're not going to be able to do a film about that without the charm that was brought to the original role, because it's just going to come across as like, could just come across as offensive.
Yeah, it could do, actually. It's about, Forrest Gump walks a really, really strange, very thin line.
They mentioned
yeah.
that in Tropic Thunder, actually. They didn't mention Forrest
Gump. If they didn't have Tom Hanks, I don't know how they would have pulled that off.
No.
There's also the idea, so one of the, you could say a gimmick almost of the original film was how Forrest stumbled into these major world events. Mm. But in the original film, that was specifically, in the original story, I should say, that was originally crafted for Forrest at that time. If you did that today, you'd have to, the excuses for why he was there would really start to wear thin. Mm. I think you pointed out, Isaac, with the internet, you'd have to bring up the fact that someone somewhere, or a lot of people somewhere, would start to notice all the stuff he's been to.
Mm. And they'd find out who he was as well.
Exactly.
Like, it'd be quite easy to do that now.
And I suppose part of the appeal is the executive producers would really be trying to recapture the gimmick of the film.
Mm. Yeah, and it's, you know, when it was came out in the 90s, it did play off, but not nostalgia, but like the events that were still relatively recent from, what was it, like the, from the 50s to like the early 80s. And, you know, the stuff like the soundtrack, which, you know, is just full of hits of the time. Like, if you did that today, like, people would, again, you know, like what would you put in? If that's what they did, like, what events, major events in, let's say, US history would they put in?
Like remaking Billy Joel's We Didn't Start the Fire. You just, is yeah, that like, a bit convoluted?
Like, from, yeah. Let's say, the early 80s to the present, or the early 80s to, like, 2000, or whatever time frame they want to use, mm. what would be put in? It's like in school, if you ever do history in school, it seems history ends in 1991.
Yeah, well, at the time, they thought history had ended. That was like a common theme of the 90s, is that at the time it seemed like there were going to be no more war. Like, that's walking a very thin line in itself, if you had to remake that. So what do you guys think of my pick?
I do agree with Forrest Gump, yes. Yeah. I don't think that should be remade at all, just because I, from all the reasons we've said, I don't think it would really work anymore. And it was already walking such a fine line in the 90s that really now you wouldn't be able to do that with Forrest, I don't think. So I don't think that would work now.
Yeah, it's similar to like Robert Zemeckis did with Back to the Future. Like, he doesn't want anybody to remake it, so he owns the rights till he dies, so no one can touch it.
Is that what film you want to do?
No. I just meant because I would say Taxi Driver was my choice, because you could update Taxi Driver, you know, but that film is so specifically set especially in New York in the 70s. If you were to recreate it, the 70s New York, it would just kind of feel phony. Like, there is a feel like this isn't like, you know, not fictionalized, but like contrived. It feels like, oh, they just shot footage of New York at that time. And the idea of Travis Bickle as a character and people like that still exist out there. And Paul Schrader, who wrote the original, wrote Taxi Driver, has done films which are similar, that kind of character, like last year with First Reformed. It's like, is very similar to Taxi Driver, but it's talking about different things.
Yeah.
So with Taxi Driver, because again, it's like in my top 10 favorite films, it's not if you can, because there's films that have done similar characters and similar ideas, but again,
if you should,
there's no point in recreating like the 70s, because it, like, you couldn't do it without feeling some form of contrivance to it.
Who would you cast if you had to?
It would have to, I don't know, like a Jake Gyllenhaal.
What is your choice?
I kind of I had a really big think about this. I feel like I have two choices. I feel
that's
like
fine, you can do two.
If we were going to say based on a character, I would say The Green Mile, because I don't think you will get anybody better than Michael Clarke Duncan. Good grief. Can't I say his name? Is it Michael Clarke Duncan? It is,
yeah,
isn't it?
Right.
Yeah. I don't think you get anybody better than him for John Coffey. 100%. I just can't see that ever again happening that
another
well.
Another issue is, who would you like choose for these iconic roles? Like, if you were doing Back to the Future again, who... Like, trying to cast Marty and...
Tom Holland, probably, to be honest.
If you had to choose...
If I had to choose...
It'd still, like, feel more like a parody, almost.
Yeah. But I think in terms of, like, a film, I would say something like Titanic, because Titanic barely works in some ways, and it's become kind... No, it's very good. It's become very popular to hate on Titanic. I think because of, like, the Celine Dion song has been overplayed, and, like, I think it's also quite easy to hate on something that's so... geared towards women and especially young females, like the sort of young teenage audience and things like that.
Do you remember in Titanic, like when the ship was, it kind of breaks in half?
Yeah.
And there's people dropping. There's like one dude.
Yeah,
who,
and
like,
he hits the propeller.
And he spins.
Yeah.
And it's like Looney Tunes.
It is funny.
I know it's not funny because Titanic is a horrible thing.
Yeah, but that one thing is a little funny.
Yeah,
But it has these kind of like cheesiness to it. But at the same time, it has this like overwhelming fear and dread through it. Like you have the first half and you've got your romance, and that works, I think, only because of its leads. I think it's got some really cheesy dialogue that doesn't work without it being Kate Winslet and Leonardo DiCaprio.
Like your French girls.
Yeah, I don't think that would work if you didn't have the right people doing it at the right time and that having the exact kind of like culture for it to be prevalent in. And I don't think we have that anymore.